He covers college football and more for USA Today. Catch up online. Visit usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter. The handle is at George Schroeder. George, welcome back. How are things?
Life is good. How are you?
Great. Ditto. Well put, by the way. You posted a story on USA Today about Matt Rhule, who's the new Baylor coach, and obviously walking into an unstable circumstance. But so he introduces his first recruiting class. But I'm curious, what did he have to say about the obvious questions players, parents, who's ever involved in the process had about playing for a school that's, let's face it, right now they're under fire?
Well, I mean, first of all, Matt Rhule walked into a tough situation. I don't think anybody who's paid any attention to the Baylor situation over the last, you know, year or so would disagree with that. And he had nothing to do with any of
sure.
the reasons that they're in this tough situation. And so he's kind of got a really difficult job. He walked in there with one committed player, and you know, and so he gets the job in December, and typically you have 7 or 8 or 10 or 15, and maybe 2 or 3 of them waiver, or maybe 5 or 6 of them waiver, and you keep some of them, and some of them go somewhere else. But you've got, you know, maybe half a class sort of halfway done. Not only did they have one player committed, they didn't even have any list of players that the former staff had been looking at, because the former staff, it's not like your typical firing or resignation at the end of the season. The former staff had been, you know, kept on after Art Briles was fired. The assistants were kept on for the season, but they knew they were not going to be back. They knew they were done. And so they didn't do essentially any recruiting, which is an amazing thing. So he walked in with nothing. And so he's basically had to tell, you know, he's basically had to sell Baylor and sell himself and his assistant coaches to these recruits from scratch. And so to answer your question, long story short, he basically had to say, look, bad things have happened at Baylor. We don't know all the bad things that have happened. Maybe some more revelations will come out. And by the way, some more have since they signed these players on signing day. Again, all of those things have happened in the past, but every time it comes out, there's fresh outrage. So he said, hey, you know, there are bad things, but let's be a part of making a change for the positive. Let's be a part of making Baylor better. And that sort of has been his that's been his pitch. I mean, it's much more nuanced than that, but that's kind of distilling it into its essence. And you know what? I mean, who knows how well that went down with a lot of parents, but they did. They signed 29 players, counting some that signed early and that count back to the previous class. And, you know, I have to tell you, I understand the people that think Baylor football should never play another football game. I don't think they're right about that. I understand them. Those people, however you feel about the things that happened in the past and what Baylor football ought to be going forward, you shouldn't take it out on Matt Rhule and his guys. They're trying to do things the right way. There's been a complete turnover of the football program, including support level staffing. And I really, as much as you can say this, I think they're trying to do things the right way, certainly a much different way than we've come to learn was being done under Art Briles.
No, I think that's fair. And one last thing that I found very interesting that you brought up, you know, Rhule's from Temple, obviously a Philly school. He went to Penn State. He's worked at Buffalo, Western Carolina. He's not exactly a good old Texas boy, but what steps did he take to kind of let people know he gets how important it is to kind of establish those Lone Star roots?
Yeah, and listen, first of all, you got to understand, there may not be a place in the country where it's more important to have Lone Star ties. I don't know if you have to have roots, but you got to have ties.
Right, I meant ties. That's a better word.
So preferably a bolo tie, I guess, right?
But, nice.
Well, first of all, he does have some boots, which, as it turns out, he's had for a couple of years, and they're appropriately scuffed up looking. But, you know, he's not trying to be a poser and wear a 10-gallon hat or something. He's not trying to be something he's not. By the way, one of the things, and I knew Matt a little bit before I spent the day with him, but, you know, now I know him a little bit better. One of the things that struck me, by the way, was how fast he talked. And it reminded me of another coach that we all know who came into a place where he wasn't around and talked really fast all the time, and it was Chip Kelly.
Yep.
It reminded me in that way Chip Kelly. Now, you know, and in a lot of other ways, too. They're obviously type A personalities and highly successful. But in answer to your question about the Texas ties, he immediately went and he hired three Texas high school football coaches for various positions on the staff. I think the way it's going to shake out is two of them will be actually coaching in kind of on-field coaching positions, and one of them will be in a support role, like an analyst or director of high school relations or that kind of thing. But he hired three highly touted guys, well-respected, one of whom was a San Antonio area high school coach, was the current, at the time, was the current president of the Texas High School Coaches Association. Another one from the Dallas area had won two or three state titles in one of the larger classes. And then the third one was down in the Houston area. So he kind of hit, a bunch of the metropolitan areas where you'd pluck a lot of talent. And two of them were Baylor alums, too, which is not a bad way to go either, because you feel like they can sort of speak to the sort of the heritage of the Baylor culture before this, before the Brile stuff happened. So, and when I said that you can't quite really tell how important it is to have Texas ties, there's no place quite like that where the high school coaches kind of think of themselves as, they think pretty highly of themselves in Texas, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Charlie Strong, the former Texas coach, took some heat for going and getting some players from Florida, which is, by the way, where he had a bunch of ties in his first recruiting class. And the attitude of the Texas high school coaches is, that kid better be a lot better than these Texas kids, because otherwise you need to go get kids from Texas. And by the way, I don't, Mac Brown went a bunch of years without taking anybody from anywhere but Texas. He would only be in Texas. And I'm not talking about in the latter years. I'm talking about when Texas was really rolling in the national recruiting rankings. So, it makes some sense. The high school coaches understand what they're, it's not like they're saying crazy things. So I think Matt Rhule's done a really nice job, at least early, in doing what he could do to salvage a first class and get himself off on the right foot with the Texas high school coaches, which is a huge importance. It's way, way more important than it is, say, to being good with the Southern California high school coaches. It's just no other real good comparison. It's way more important than it is to being good with the South Florida high school coaches. So, just crazy.
No, I think he came out of this. I thought he came off as a really sharp guy who gets exactly what he was walking into. So, you guys could check it out. Go to usatoday.com and check out George. Well, his name is George Schroeder.
That's more Baylor talk than we've had in a non-scandal.
Yes.
In forever. And probably too much.
Right.
But my fault. Sorry.
No, I'm saying it was an interesting deviation is why I brought it up. Now, I know it happened a month ago, but in the news today, a P.J. Fleck, the new Minnesota coach, can use his row the boat philosophy. In general, we've seen coaches go from that level to a big league school. Brian Kelly to Notre Dame, Chris Peterson from Boise to UW. Does it make any sense to say this is maybe, I don't know if easier is the right way, but less pressure-filled way to climb the coaching chart to go to, in essence, a second division Power 5 school?
Yeah, well, first of all, he wasn't going to get a
– right.
He wasn't on the list. There was all the talk about Oregon, this, Oregon, that. Well, he wasn't one of their top guys. He wasn't really
sure.
One of their candidates. That was coming out of the P.J. Fleck end of things, not the Oregon end of things. So and of those jobs that were sort of that level, he wasn't involved in. And that's – no slight to him. It's just, that's just what people thought. And I do agree with you that there's less pressure on him at Minnesota than there would be had he landed one of those top. Let's say he somehow landed the Texas job. He'd be under immense pressure as opposed to being at Minnesota to use, the other thing that I think a lot of people wonder is, you alluded to the row the boat thing. A lot of people wonder, all right, is that shtick going to carry over at the Power 5 level? And I think a lot of people wondered, how that would play at a national power like an Oregon or a Texas or somebody like that, and whether it would work out. Now, I think in Minnesota it works pretty well, just because, I don't know if you've heard this, it's the land of 10,000 lakes. So now the problem is they're always frozen over this time of year.
Right.
But assuming he can, get on the river there between Minneapolis and St. Paul, they can literally row the boat if they want. So. Look, I think P.J. Fleck's a good coach. There were people that thought maybe he was a little bit, this is a pretty bad one, out over his skis maybe, and maybe a little bit ahead of himself in terms of where he thought he should be headed. And I think Minnesota's a good place to try to get it done. Now, that said, they just got rid of a guy, Tracy Clays, who had won a bunch of games but wasn't the athletic director's guy. You know, he had, you know, moved up when Jerry Kill resigned because of the health issues.
Right.
So it's not like he's replacing a guy who, you know, the program went 3-9 and was inactive. So there should be some pressure from that, at least.
Let's get to another topic, a little closer to home. Much was made about Oregon, obviously firing Coach Helf, bringing in a whole new staff. Issues soon surfaced, and we discussed them. But I don't think I got your take yet on the new offensive line / coordinator. Teams or programs love to tap into those with major success. What do you think of the hire, or know about Mario Cristobal, who came to Eugene from Alabama?
Well, he has he's always had a reputation as a big-time recruiter, which is a good deal because obviously one of the problems that Oregon's had and the reason they went into a bit of a tailspin and the reason there's a new coaching staff and that there was an opening for Mario to show up has been the lack of recruiting over the last 2, 3, 4 years or whatever. We can figure out where to date it back. So he's a big-time recruiter. But, you know, at Florida International, he showed chops as a pretty nice head coach, too. And he kind of got let go by an athletic director who I think made an ill-advised move, quite frankly. And Florida International has paid for that ever since. They were successful under Mario. So he brings a really good reputation for recruiting, but also just as a good X's and O's coach. And it remains to be seen, you know, how things will go in Oregon. You never know how it's going to go when somebody moves to a different spot. But he also did a real nice job at Alabama. Now, let me say one other thing. He's essentially basically not been talked to by anybody publicly for a couple of years now because at Alabama, only the coordinators talk and only a couple times a year. But, I think that of all the hires that Willie Taggart made, that's one of the best ones. And he's made several really good ones, but That's one of the best ones. I think that's probably the national view, and that's where I would come from on that.
Sure.
Is, wow, you got Mario Cristobal. I can't even pronounce Cristobal. I always want to say Cristobal, but I can't quite get the pronunciation right. But wow, you got him. That's a really good hire. That was sort of the reaction.
I want to get to college hoops because when the craziness at Kansas was going on the other night against West Virginia, when they came from 14 down with 3 minutes left, I like what you hit on Twitter. It's almost like you call that a comeback because you were in Oklahoma City last March. You saw that insane Texas A&M game, right?
Yeah, I did. Texas A&M down 12 to Northern Iowa in the second round, or we're back to calling it the second round, whatever they're calling it last year. But then, you know, we're just going to call it second round.
Right.
down 12 with 33 seconds left. It wasn't quite that incredible. And by the way, Northern Iowa had owned the game. They looked like the better, not the more talented, but the better team all game long. And then just everything that could go wrong for them and everything that could go right for Texas A&M did go wrong or did go right, depending on your perspective. And boom, you look up and it's like, wait a second, this thing is what in the world is going on here? And then it went to 2 overtimes and A&M won, and it was an unbelievable deal. You remember the game before, Northern Iowa had beaten somebody. Was it Texas? With a half-court shot. You remember that?
Yep.
In the first round? So they'd already been involved in the nutty game, but I've never seen anything like Texas A&M coming back from 12 down with 33 seconds left. And for it to happen in the NCAA tournament, that happened late at night, so some people maybe didn't see it until the next day when everybody wanted to show you that last, you know, sequence. It's the most incredible thing I've ever seen. Now, all that said, if you watched Big Monday and you saw Kansas come back to beat West Virginia, that was pretty incredible, too. But it was, you know, it was 14 points in, what, 2 minutes and 40 seconds or something like that? That's still incredible, and it's still an incredible comeback and an unbelievable meltdown, too. If West Virginia does anything at any point, they sort of put the game away, and they didn't. That was incredible, too. But this was – it'll never – nothing maybe ever come to close to what I saw in the tournament last year, in the NCAA tournament. I mean, Texas A&M coming back, 12 down, 33 seconds left is just fantastic.
I couldn't live with myself. I had to check. Paul Jesperson with the bank shot against Texas. All right.
It was Texas. It was a bank shot. And Texas had come back to either tie or take the lead one or the other you know, with 4 or 5 seconds left, and you're like, wow, Texas just blew the blew our Cinderella story. And then Paul Jefferson threw the half-court shot up. Now, hey, little known fact, it was either in late regulation after A&M had tied it, or in one of the overtimes, Jefferson tried an ill-advised shot from a little bit further away with about 4 or 5 seconds left, and he could have dribbled in the shot a 25-footer.
Right, right. Oh, man, I forgot about that.
This is so way deep into a game that nobody paid any attention to in Eugene because they were watching the Ducks running to the West Region Final. That they're like all clicking their sets off right now.
No, actually, they're like, oh, yeah, that killed my bracket. So they got their pitchforks and torches, and they're probably coming after me.
Let me just say this. If their bracket was, I guess people probably could have had Northern Iowa beating Texas. That makes some sense. But you're right, that would have killed. One way or another, it kills your bracket.
All right. Final thought. Considering where you live and the Oklahoma City NBA fans, a less than warm welcome for Kevin Durant. I mean, booing, you expect. But some of the personal insults, I mean, got a little bit nasty. Did they go a little over the top, or you just got to expect this is how fans operate now?
Did you pick up on that? You picked up on the little fact that they weren't real happy with Kevin Durant?
Yeah, they hit it well.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty subtle. I was kind of surprised. No, I'm kidding. But look, I thought they would boo too. And I don't know that there was a whole lot of over the line name calling. And we've certainly heard a couple people make some accusations of that. And I guess that could have happened. But if it did, it was, you know, less than 1% of a crowd. You know what I mean? You're not talking about. I think most people were just booing. Now, They did chant cupcake at him, but they didn't make that up himself. That was a deal from way back in the day. It was sort of a Thunder team thing. Whenever Kendrick Perkins thought Thunder players were soft, he would call them cupcakes.
Right.
And when Russell Westbrook learned, the day he learned it was July 4th, that Durant was going to go to the Warriors, he didn't put anything out on social media or anywhere else except he tweeted a picture of cupcakes. And so that sort of become the deal. People thought they knew what he meant. Now, who knows? With Russell Westbrook, I think that is what he meant, but who knows? It sort of came out afterward that sort of filtered out that's when we sort of learned that they had sort of that internal cupcake
right.
thing from Kendrick Perkins. So that's, you know, I got to tell you, I get it. They've been waiting forever to let him know how what they thought about him leaving. And they did. And my guess is when the Warriors that come back, I think in March, I don't think it's April, I think it's March, he'll get something similar. And I think he'll get something similar next year and the next year. And then eventually it'll fade a little bit. And then maybe one day people will be able to sort of say, hey, yeah, we do understand what you did for the city, for the franchise in 8 years. But the idea that they were going to just sort of, you know, welcome him back with open arms, I mean, from their standpoint, and by the way, from everybody's standpoint except the Warriors and Kevin Durant's standpoint, the idea is the team that you had beaten in Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals and you imploded and you had a significant amount to do with the implosion. So did Westbrook. That team that then went on to beat you in Game 7, you just joined them. You went and joined the super team. It's kind of a weak move. I think that's what everybody, not just Thunder fans, but everybody who's not a Warriors fan or Kevin Durant entourage thinks. And I think they wanted to let him know how they felt.
Well, point taken. You could catch George's work, USAtoday.com, or pick up a copy of USA Today at George Schroeder on Twitter. George, always fun catching up. Welcome back, and I look forward to chatting in a week.
Same here. Look forward to it. Thanks, man.
All right. Take it easy.